So would you make sure that your cell phone is in a place where it won't disturb anybody? Thank you, Corbin. For those of you who are here, for those of you who are online, if it weren't for Corbin and for John, you wouldn't watch this. I mean, you couldn't see it. So thank you. They're back there pushing buttons and doing whatever. Thank you. So I'm really grateful for online presence. So the technology is really wonderful. I mean, really, truly wonderful. So no matter who you are or where you are on your spiritual journey, you are celebrated here. So let's do as we do and begin in silence. Our goal is to be present. Our goal is to be open, to be awake during this time. Grace be in our heads and in our thinking. Grace be in our eyes and in our seeing. Grace be in our ears and in our hearing. Grace be in my mouth and in my speaking. Grace be in our hearts and in our understanding. And grace be at our ends and at our departing. And may, because of what we do here, we grow in patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. Those are the values that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes today. Next Sunday, we'll have breakfast here. The St. Paul's Foundation asked me some time ago, Joanna Wolf, I mean like months ago, if they could have this coming Sunday to present the grants and awards that they do to the nonprofits that they support during this time. St. Paul's Foundation is a wonderful, wonderful arm and ministry of this church. It houses all the endowments and other funds, like the endowment that brought Jackie Lewis here is housed in the St. Paul's Foundation. So they will be here to do that next Sunday. I'll be here to introduce, and it just turned out to be such a fluke because next Sunday I will be preaching both the 8:30 and the 11 o'clock service. Anytime there's a text that Dr. McDonald doesn't want to preach on, he gives it to me. That's not entirely true. You know that there's a story in Mark, also it's copied in Matthew and Luke, about this guy who goes to Jesus one day and says, what do I have to do to have eternal life? You know this story? And Jesus says to him, you have to sell everything you have and give it to the poor, right? That's the text for next Sunday. And so just yesterday, I was found, or it found me, this cartoon, which the clergyman says, and Jesus said, give all you have to the poor, follow me. And this is his expression. And then he said, today I'll explain why he didn't really mean that. So that's what I will do next Sunday in the service. No, to be serious, Dr. McDonald is very generous in giving the other clergy here opportunities to preach in the service. Today, Kate did preach. Kate's a good preacher, and it's a good service. First Sunday. World Communion Sunday. So I hope you're well and doing well in these times. Nobody's anxious. Right? You have no idea how grateful I am to you. Charles Reel, who used to be on the staff here, he and I left the sanctuary building last Sunday at the same time, and he put his arm around me. Charles, a big old guy, and says, Bill, we've no idea how blessed our lives have been by St. Paul's, which is true. I mean, for me, and I think for other people who get to work here, because it's just great. You know, the teacher always learns more than the student. So in teaching you, I learn more. Consequently, you are my teachers. Get it? If I learn, then you teach. I thought that was a good line, but I'm going to take it out now. It's just, so. So we're taking a few weeks now to talk about the stormy waters which are in our culture. I've used this theme, the sacred stream. We ride on these waters. Sometimes it feels like we are drowning in these waters. We are these waters, and these waters are in us. All of that is true at the same time. This is non-dual stuff that we ended up talking about last week. Many of spiritual teachers refer to this list of things as just what is. This is what is. Now, I want to begin today, after having said that, by saying again that there are two things that I think are so important to stay awake to and aware of all the time. And I bring them up from time to time because they so easily slip out of our awareness. One of these things is projection. It's not only valuable to know about projection, but also in the spiritual realm, as is true with so many things, it's humiliating to find out about or to stay aware of. One of my most vivid experiences in clinical training was one day in class when our teacher's supervisor walked into class. He was a big guy, over 6 feet, very muscular, red-haired, from Ireland, which I won't pretend to imitate the accent. And he introduced himself by saying, "Gentlemen, good day, my name is Morris. And beyond that, everything is projection." Every relationship we have with everyone is affected by projection. Right now, this minute, the relationship that you think you have with me in your head is a result of projection. And vice versa. The relationship I have with you is the relationship that is made up purely of projection. Now, what I've learned is that we can't stop projecting. We can just become aware of it. We project not only onto each other our own psychological contents, both conscious and unconscious, but we project onto politicians, political parties, media stars, our pets. I have a cat that I know knows what I'm thinking and saying to him. We project onto our football teams, and we do it with our institutions, especially churches, political parties, and church and institutions of higher education. We call the schools that we graduate from our alma mater, which is Latin for nourishing, bounteous mother. That's a projection. So it's easy for me to assume that my needs, my wants, my fears, my hopes are equally shared by you. That's a projection. And I'm going to give you a more concrete example of projection later in this teaching. The other dynamic that it is extremely important to know about is transference. Transference is when I transfer to someone else my personal history with regard to the experience that I am having. So again, we can so easily idealize people, institutions, our intimate partners, or that person you wish you was your intimate partner, the church. I cannot tell you how often in my time in ministry I have had to deal with people who've gotten a job at the church, idealizing the church, only to find out that the church is made up of people just like them. Or the way that I put it, they find out how the sausage is made. Right? And when we do this transference, we relinquish our personal responsibility and approach the present moment with beliefs and behaviors that are left over from our past. Projection and transference are things that I will probably revisit over and over and over again because they are so important. And I was thinking while working on this class, I wish that we could all hold in mind things that we've talked about in here in the past, particularly about developmental levels, moving from one psychological level to another, because on every level, projection and transference are different. Okay. So, though it is important, I believe, to try our best to stay aware of these two dynamics, at all times, I think it is especially important during these fraught times, because not only do projection and transference easily allow us to fall into patterns of avoiding, complying, trying to control people and situations, they're also precursors to our making unwarranted and, more often than not, quite erroneous judgments. Now, I suggested last week that you try to go a week without lying. How'd that go? Without putting a spin of any kind on anything. So in a court of law, a witness is asked to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because there are differences between the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. There are plenty of times when we tell the truth, but it might not be the whole truth. And when we try to justify that behavior, we say, well, I was just telling a white lie. Which is when we start moving away from nothing but the truth. So last week I spoke about the need for truth-telling in our culture, and I said I wanted to continue that today and then move into beginning to talk a little bit about character. And I'm doing that for two reasons. First of all, I don't know what your experience is. So I'm aware of projection. But my experience is that we live culturally in about as stormy a time as we have lived in since the 1960s. The waters we are on, to continue the sacred metaphor, stream are rough. And we need a storm-worthy craft. And one of the fundamentals for building that craft is the truth. Now, there are other materials that go in the craft, but truth is the fundamental one that we're shooting for. And the second reason I'm spending our time doing this, and here's where projection on my part comes into play, we're individuals in this culture where alienation is so prevalent. Now, you may not judge that you are in any way affected by what I'm going to describe. If so, I have two things to say. One, I would invite you to reconsider. And two, I would invite you to teach Sunday after next your secrets. Our society is experiencing pervasive alienation, and our society is made up of you and me, not them. That's one of the problems in our culture, is that we other others and think they're to blame, which projection and transference gets us to step away from taking personal responsibility for what is. Okay? We're alienated from each other. We are alienated from the earth. We are alienated from what we're calling in here sacred mystery, if you're comfortable with the word God, you can use that. We are alienated from Jesus and from the teachings of Jesus. I want to keep reminding myself and you that if we were in some other culture, this item of alienation would not be on the list. If we were in Japan or Vietnam or Turkey, this would not be on the list. Because those cultures do not have a history of Christian tradition. And the only reason this aspect of alienation has reached the boiling point that it has in our culture is because the political right is pushing what it claims to be a Christian agenda. I'm going to come back to that again also in a moment. We're alienated from ourselves. I don't know what got into me that I said that, that I did that. Further, there are many people who feel like they are alienated from the culture itself. People who feel like they're aliens in this culture. Now, in the prophetic Jewish tradition and in the early Jesus movement, people were very familiar with feeling alienated. And I'm hoping as we go along talking about the sacred stream, we can tap into that experience of alienation that they had and the strength that came from it. People and institutions of power are not feeling alienated. One example of this is this, in the face of obvious sexual abuse on the part of priests in the Catholic Church and clergy in the Protestant Church, errant passion is no respecter of religious belief or denominations. The institution has consistently sided with the perpetrators and not the victims. Consistently. Now, if you're a victim of that, you leave the church. If you're aware of that and you stay in the church, you have a conflict of trying to keep it up into awareness, so the best thing to do is to bury it, and it goes away. Got it? All that stuff doesn't go away. It just goes down, surface some other way. So from the beginning of all the Jesus narratives, we have Jesus depicted as a person who speaks the truth, and he claims that the truth will set people free. And the story told about his execution, Jesus is being abused by the officials of the court, and he says, if I have done something wrong, prove it. But if I have spoken this plain truth, why are you slapping me around? So he's taken before Pilate, who is the only person named in the Apostles' Creed. The only person given a name in the Apostles' Creed is Pilate. And Pilate says, "So, are you a king or not?" And Jesus answers, "You tell me. Because I am king, I was born and entered the world so I could witness to the truth." Everyone who cares for truth, who has any feeling for the truth, recognizes my voice. To which Pilate responds, "What is truth?" And this is where we are. What is truth? There have always been divisions and differences between people. This is because no two people see or experience anything the same way. We also have difference in preferences and taste. Some people like the Houston Texans, some people like the Cowboys. Some people have seen the light and like Kansas City. I love anchovies. My wife detests anchovies. I don't know what's wrong with her. For 50 years, I've tried to get her to, no, it doesn't work. We would come back from some experience abroad, and I would hear Sherry talk about some experience we had had, and I would wonder, were we on the same trip? Or I would tell some story about something that happened, and she would say, "That ain't what happened." We all have experiences that recognize that we see things differently. Most of the time, they make little or no difference. Oh, well, that's an interesting way to see that. In this culture, there was a shift that occurred in 2020. Now, the seeds for this shift had been planted sometime before, but in 2020, it came to the front. It came to the forefront when COVID came. Up until then, there seemed to be an alliance between truth, science, faith, and trust. When a medical professional said, "Here's the cause of your illness. If you take this medicine, it will save your life," we would take the medicine. Okay. Thank you for saving my life. Science was fact-based. Science relied on truth. We had faith in this process. We trusted the process. Now, I have become, and this is sad, convinced that many of my fellow citizens cannot be trusted with scientific data to read it correctly. Now, when the difference is about which professional football team is best, that's no big deal, really. It's a lot of fun. But when it's about a communicable disease that kills people, that's a big deal. Now, how did this come about? That question is going to be answered by some historian 50 years from now. So stick around. You get an answer then. Sociologists are already giving us some answers. But depending on which side of the divide you're on, people don't like them. Because when something comes up that some people don't like, they just say, "Well, that's not true." Or in the extreme, they say, "That's fake news." So that solid science gets drowned out in that din. So one of the things that happened is that institutions that generally draw us together have diminished in their influence. Church is one. Churches have been losing credibility for decades because they've turned a blind eye to wrong, because they don't want to enter into, and we do it in this church, and it's a problem. We say a creed in this church that was written pre-Copernican. And many, many people don't like it, don't say it, translate it some other way. But if you approach the church and say, we should not be doing this, we should do something different, the answer is, we've always done it this way. Even liberals, progressives can say that. We fail to keep up with the time. The misguided debate that the church has entered into for decades now over human sexuality has done irreparable damage to the reputation of the church. And our failure to speak up on issues of racial justice, economic justice. Now, the people in the culture with the biggest megaphones, especially politicians and the media, being driven by money and power, have begun also to treat each other with a lack of civility. And that's planted this mistrust as well. We withdrew into bubbles of like-minded people where we could be confident of our own position. We listen to what we already agree with when we get our news. This is called confirmation bias. So that though there is nothing more un-American than hating other Americans, that is precisely where our culture has gone. And people do it because they feel they are justified to defend their positions rather than have a conversation or seek the truth. Social media and political parties are two of the biggest culprits, if culprit is the right word to use for our current condition. And a way out of this mess is a commitment to the truth. Science is a powerful tool for separating truth from falsehood. Not in all areas, but in critically important ones. And then we have to have faith in values that make up character. And those values are justice, love, compassion. All of these are in the spiritual realm, and they are all of critical importance. 17% of something, is that a pretty good percentage? Would you say? It's almost a quarter, right? Right? Okay. At the moment, in this country, a trusted poll found that 17% of Americans believe that the government, the media, and financial institutions in the U.S. are controlled by a group of Satan-worshipping pedophiles who run a global child sex trafficking operation. 17%. Now, if you get your news from MSNBC, you likely think Fox is hopelessly biased and their reports are untrustworthy. If you are a Fox watcher, you hear that the mainstream media is captured by the left and presents fake news. Which do you believe? I want my wife to tell me the truth. And she wants me to tell her the truth. You want your partner to tell you the truth. You want your children to learn to speak the truth. That's a part of character. And it's nice to know whether someone is trustworthy or not. Now, here is some here is a diagram, not a very good, well-drawn one, but a diagram of areas of truth, levels of truth. There's some things that are firmly established that you cannot debate. 2 + 2 = 4, unless you're really neurotic or psychotic. The city of Rome is in Italy, except there are towns named Rome in other states and places. But when you say Rome, most people say, well, that's in Italy. There are some things that are scientifically true, but there are some things that are not scientifically true, but they are rather established facts. For example, many people have heard and believe that if you get a college education, that leads to greater earning power. That's not always the truth. But generally, it's true. There are exceptions. In the field of medicine, it is an established fact that vaccines against measles and polio are effective. It is also true that some people, when vaccinated, have a reaction to that. During the 1950s, when polio vaccine was first coming out, a batch of vaccine was contaminated. It caused thousands of cases of polio. But by and large, the polio vaccine has eradicated polio around the world. Now it's begun to crop up in a few cases. By the way, the report that the vaccine against mumps and measles causes autism has been thoroughly debunked, proven to be false. And yet, many people still believe that if you get vaccines as a child, you're opening yourself to all sorts of problems in the future. So once we adopt a position, it's hard to move away from. So here's my example of projection that I said I would bring up a minute ago. Not long ago, I found myself in a holding pen. You know, like the waiting area in the med center when you're waiting for, or you're in the holding pen at a restaurant waiting for your table to be called. And I struck up a conversation with a guy next to me. Harvey Cox was the first one I heard say, and then I've heard it many times then, you can always tell a man from Harvard, but you can't tell him much. So there was just something about this guy, and I opened the door, and I said something, and he said, yeah, he went to Harvard. He has a Harvard undergraduate and a Harvard graduate degree. Now, my time at Harvard was one of the pivotal points of my life. I assumed that we had similar values and views. Projection. So I risk asking him his thoughts about the upcoming election. And he informed me with much confidence that the Democratic candidate would win, which pleased me because that's my personal preference. Now, yours might differ. But you know, there's just something great about feeling that you're with a like-minded person. We got something to talk about. I said, well, that's interesting, really. How are you so sure about that? You seem confident. And because given my political bias, I was looking for that same confidence. And he said, oh, they'll win like they won in 2020 by stealing the election. Here was my chance. How did they do that? I wanted to know from this guy with a postgraduate degree from Harvard. And he said, it's all in the absentee ballots. They're not monitored, they're not secure, and the Democrats got in and changed them, they'll do it again. Everybody knows that. Now, Now, I am not just feeling that the guy is ignorant. He's not stupid. But I'm feeling hurt. My feelings are hurt because I have been left out of something everybody knows. Why wasn't I included? Was it something I said, or I will never know. It's like when somebody tells you something and concludes with, anybody with common sense knows this. That's just their way of saying you're stupid. And what they really mean is that if you had my worldview and you had my experience, you'd see things like I do. That's just common sense. So we are in a time when outright dismissals of objective facts, when they conflict with personal opinion, are escalating. And this is what has given rise to that phenomenon I mentioned last week, alternative facts. Now, as you move further from the center of what's called necessary truth, you move into areas that are potentially true, but whose supporting evidence is currently insufficient to move them to the circle of established fact. And then there comes the area of pure opinion. Dogs better than cats. Tattoos are cool. Taylor Swift is the best performer ever. And so forth. So as I said last week, we moved into this era called postmodernism, which is what led to alternative facts. Embracing alternative facts may advance your side's agenda, but it does nothing to put you on the path to character. Because in order to embrace alternative facts, you have to set aside objective truth. You have to look at the photograph or the x-ray and say, that's not what it says. And that is happening in our culture. There's a great cynicism in our culture about truth, about facts. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. There are people, usually to the left of center, who embrace alternative facts, except when it comes to a pet project of theirs, like climate change. And here they have the truth. While at the same time, there are people to the right of center who say that absolute truth does exist, but then they will embrace a conspiracy theory that will make your eyes spin. So we're not consistent. Now, Francis Collins, in his book, Road to Wisdom, Francis Collins, before his retirement, worked with Fauci in the CDC, I think, was his background, scientist, a doctor, researcher. He's written a book called The Road to Wisdom, which I've not finished reading. But he says in his book that there are six categories of untruth. First, there's ignorance. And again, ignorance is not the same as being stupid. Ignorance is just, I will not look at that. I will ignore that. There's falsehood. Much of social media falls into this category. During a recent vice presidential debate, one of the participants said something that was untrue, and one of the moderators called him on it. And the response was, you said you would not fact check me. Then there are lies. We all do it. Usually we think we're being kind or nice. I'm trying to stay out of trouble. And then there's delusion. And then there's a word I can't say in church. The person who is the BSer has no interest in facts. He just wants to sell you something. This car will get 72 miles a gallon. whatever. And then there is propaganda, which is a massive collection of lies and distortions designed to accomplish some political intent. And if people hear the same thing over and over and over, there is a tendency to absorb it and to believe it. And this is one of the reasons that Jung said, if you don't tell the world who you are, it will tell you. I was talking to some young people this week, this is not in my notes, but this week about their experience in public school, about what they do and don't learn. And I remember when I went to school in Tennessee, we were taught fables as facts about this country. We were taught that the Indians welcomed the people who came to this country with open arms and gave us their land because we were better farmers. It's what I was taught. I was also taught that Washington chopped down a cherry tree and told his dad about it. Whether one embraces a religious position or preference or not, healthy societies are societies that are built on the ability to speak the truth and to gain some consensus about what is true. I've lost my place. Push the wrong button. At least you know I'm near the end. Healthy civilizations have had the goal of discerning knowledge in order to dispel ignorance and then base societal decisions on a consensus of what is true so that the culture and people in it can flourish. This is the pivotal point where I think this country is right now. Many of our leaders and those who want to show to be shown an unwillingness to listen to the truth of who we are and have been as a country are leading us away from this. And I want to give you two examples. If it comes to pass that there are people who are put into positions of leadership and power in this country, and if they, as promised, implement a project known as Project 225, it is going to be a dark day for this country. Not for everybody, but for the country. Because people who are interested in something like this, a parachurch organization that can get on the edge of the limb or even out on the edge of the leaf, they don't want that. Because Project 2025 calls for an eradication of the separation of church and state. I have said, this probably won't affect me. It will my children and my grandchildren. The intent of Project 2025 is to advance a Christian nationalist agenda. Christian nationalism is racist to the core. It is so contrary to the teachings of Jesus as to be astounding that people who call themselves Christian can embrace this position. Second, and I could give you countless illustrations. Somebody sent me this meme, which you can't read, but I'll read it to you, because it expresses the anxiety and frustration over the issue of immigration. I think across the board, liberals and conservatives, people right and left, think there's an issue with immigration that we ought to deal with in a responsible way. But this meme got my attention because it calls out how we have, as a country, been unaware of projection and transference. This Native American is saying, "You came and conquered, never seeking our permission. And now you cautiously guard your borders, fearing others will enter your nation and try to harm you. Your fear betrays your character. Rather than trusting the abundance of nature and the goodness of the human spirit, you find it difficult to trust because you know yourselves to be untrustworthy." That very history of what happened to indigenous people and the history of slavery is being written out of the textbooks that our children are learning in public education. Now, folks, if water does not continue to flow, it becomes stagnant. Any attempt to block the sacred stream always ends in disaster. Maybe not immediately, but inevitably. I keep a picture of this guy where I can see him. How many of you have heard of him? Anybody? He's a very important man to me. Giordano Bruno, who I just call Bruno because his first name is hard for me to say. He's a Franciscan friar. Richard Rohr is a Franciscan friar. You like Rohr, you would like this guy. He was born in what is now Naples. He's a Franciscan, as I said, and he, as a Franciscan, gave to the cosmos mystical qualities. You know how St. Francis said, called the sun his brother and the moon his sister. This guy did the same thing. This guy said the universe was immeasurable and had no center. Look at his birth date. So early on in this young man's life, he became enthralled with a work being done by a young man by the name of Copernicus. And he embraced those views well before the time that Copernicus actually published his work. And because of that, he was burned at the stake by the church he loved and the church he wanted to teach. Now, Bruno was not burned in service to the truth. He was burned in service of preserving the status quo. And of course, the church did this in the name of God. Think of how life and the world would be if the church had actually won that battle and science didn't. And yet, that battle still rages among fundamentalists who seek to impose a creationist dogma as science in public schools. And if vouchers pass and most kids start going to those schools, that is what will be taught. By the way, the same church leader who burned Bruno also threatened to burn, but recanted and just put under house arrest, a guy named Galileo. The church does not have a good history with stuff like this. The sacred cannot be dammed up or it becomes stagnant. We also can't predict the waves and the weather ahead. So my observation leads me to believe that most of us at times believe in some form of predestination. When I look back over my life, I can see what Robert Johnson called the golden thread that runs from the day of my birth to my standing right here. But I don't think of that as God's will. I just think I've been extremely fortunate. The reason I say that many people believe in some form of predestination is because when some tragic things happens in their lives or in the life of someone they love, their response is, well, there must be a reason for this. Or God must have a plan. I don't see it that way. Suffering is part of life, and so is joy. Sacred mystery, or God, does not control our lives. Rather, and this is better news to me, sacred mystery is present in our lives at all times, good and bad, through all things. Daily spiritual practice and religious rituals keep us mindful of this. Part of our true character, at least this is my faith, is that sacred mystery resides within us, seeking to find expression through us. That's what makes up our character. I want this conviction of God's unconditional love through all the things I endure to be a powerful factor in the living of my life, and I'm recommending that position to you as well in this formation of character. After the execution of Jesus, and before clubs that came to be called churches came into existence, to say that you were a follower of the way was a way that you had of differentiating yourself from other Jews. It's a Jewish movement, remember? So the way, which I'm calling the sacred stream, it permeates all of our lives, whether we're aware of it or not. It's a force that connects us. It connects us to all that is and all who are. Everything is connected. Everyone is connected. And that means that what we do in word and deed matters. If you perturb a system at one point, the perturbation goes all over the system. That's why what we do when we leave here matters. Now, I don't believe the sacred stream controls our lives, but if we are in tune with it, the current will carry us. And if we fight against it, the journey is just going to be that much more difficult. Again, daily spiritual practice is the way we open ourselves up to the nudges that more and more want to move us in the direction that Jesus called the reign of God. If we fight against these nudges of what at the moment I'm calling character, their patience, tolerance, kindness, love, that's going to make our lives more difficult. It's going to make the world more difficult. So last week I suggested that you go a week without lying. And your success at that was probably about as good as mine. It's hard. But I want to issue another invitation here. You know, with every eye closed and every, you know, that invitation. Some of you didn't grow up church, so you don't know that. So here's the invitation for this week. Add to speaking and hearing the truth. The opportunities that sacred mystery places in front of you to experience or express kindness, compassion, listening, generosity, patience, tolerance, and love. And instead of watching Fox, instead of watching MSNBC, talk to these things, these experiences with your partner. Or if you don't have a partner, journal about them. And if you do that, just test it. Test the truth of what I'm saying. And see if both your outlook and your life don't go better. Okay? No matter where you go this week, no matter what happens, remember this, you carry precious cargoes, so watch your step. And I will see you here next week with the breakfast at 9:45. Thank you.